Hi, and welcome to the Easton Bible Church podcast. We're so excited you've joined us today. Our hope is that God uses this message to help you experience a deeper, life-changing relationship with Jesus, because Jesus changes everything. Enjoy today's message.
So this week we are starting a new series, and we are in the Advent series. We are anticipating Christmas, this miraculous moment where God himself steps into humanity, into human time and space, and God, Jesus, who is eternally God, he becomes one of us. He becomes human. And so what we want to do over the next few weeks is spend time looking at one of the birth narratives around Jesus to have a better understanding of who he is, but also why he came and who he came for. And to do that, we're going to be looking at the Gospel of Matthew sort of as our guide, and we want to hear what Matthew has to say to us or about the events surrounding Jesus' birth. And so if you have a Bible, you can be turning right now to Matthew 1. If you got a Bible, we're going to have the text up on the screen. If you got an iPad or a tablet or a phone, whatever you need, but find Matthew 1. We're going to be digging into this passage. But before we actually begin to read from it, I want to give it a little bit of context. So Matthew has a very prominent place in Scripture in a very literal sense. It is the first book in the New Testament. And so when you have made your way all the way through the Old Testament, and you finally turn the last page of the Old Testament, you're turning into the New Testament, this is where you find Matthew. So if you were reading from Genesis, you read Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and you have made your way through what we call the first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch or the Torah, and you have struggled through Leviticus, and you have somehow fought your way through Numbers, and then you get to Joshua and Judges, and you start finding some really crazy stories. There's some fascinating things going on in there, but it's exciting and fun. And then you get into the historical books, and you learn about kings and chronologies, and you've got some Psalms and poetry and wisdom, and then the prophets, and you finally get through all of the Old Testament, and you get to the New Testament. It's like, Matthew, we made it. We're here, we did it, all the way through the Old Testament just to get here to the New Testament because we want to hear about Jesus. So Matthew, tell us about Jesus. What do you have to say to us? And from the very first line, as you turn that page, Matthew says, let me tell you about Jesus. And he opens with this, a record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ. Hold up a minute. That does not sound promising. Like, that's just not the lead-in that you're looking for, right? I mean, give us something strong, Matthew. Like, entertain us, fascinate us, inspire us, give us something incredible, a genealogy. Matthew, are you sure this is how you want to start your book? I mean, I feel like you're going to lose people pretty quickly. And we're about to find out, because I'm about to read this to you. So just buckle up, all right? We're going to find out how many of you are awake in 5 minutes from now. So evidently, though, he's serious, right? A record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham, and here we go, off to the races. Are you ready? See if I'm up for this. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac, the father of Jacob. Jacob, the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah, the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez, the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Abinadab. Abinadab, the father of Nashon. Nashon, the father of Salmon, not Salmon. Salmon. Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. I mean, Matthew, couldn't you have skipped a few? He just summarized it for us. That would have been nice, right? Just, we get the idea, but no, he's serious here. So where was I? Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. David was the father of Solomon, whose mother had been Uriah's wife. Solomon, the father of Rehoboam. Rehoboam, the father of Abijah. Abijah, the father of Asa. Asa, the father of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat, the father of Jehoram. Jehoram, the father of Uzziah. Does anyone have some water? I could use a little water about now. Uzziah, the father of Jotham. Jotham, the father of Ahaz. Ahaz, the father of Hezekiah. Hezekiah, the father of Manasseh. Manasseh, the father of Amon. Amon, the father of Josiah. And Josiah, the father of Jeconiah and his brothers at the time of the exile to Babylon. After the exile to Babylon, we're still not done. Jeconiah was the father of the father of Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel, the father of Abiud. Abiud, the father of Eliakim. Eliakim, the father of Azor. Azor, the father of Zadok. Zadok, the father of Akim. Akim, the father of Eliud. Eliud, the father of Eleazar. We're almost there. Eleazar, the father of Mathan. Mathan, the father of Jacob. And Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ, and then he puts a bow on it. Thus, there were 14 generations in all, from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the exile to Babylon, and 14 from the exile to the Christ. Whew. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Thank you very much. Whew. Man, who's in the Christmas spirit now? I mean, if that doesn't just, oh, Christmas, if that doesn't put you in the Christmas spirit, I don't know what it's going to take. I mean, some of you are rethinking your holiday traditions right now. You're like, light the tree and let's read the genealogy. Your hearts are warmed right now. You're just like, wow, Jesus, I never understood you like this. Have you ever asked a question and you thought as the person was answering that maybe they didn't really hear you right? You know, because we're like, Matthew, could you tell us about Jesus? And then he gives us this. It's like, Matthew, hold on. I don't know if you really caught what we're asking. We just want to know about Jesus, and you're giving us a genealogy. This is about as interesting as reading the credits at the end of a movie. Right? I don't even know what a key grip is. I give up. I don't care. So in our world, we don't really care that much about genealogies. I know some of you probably do. You're nerdy like that. And some of you, maybe you've gotten into that like Ancestry.com or 23andMe. I know those things exist now, and that's kind of cool. But for the most part, genealogies are just sort of like a hobby. Right? We may be kind of fascinated, intrigued by it. But see, in the ancient world, genealogies were very important. They were kept meticulously, right? These records that were kept, and especially for the ancient Jews, these genealogies were incredibly important to life, right? It was through the genealogy that you know not only, you know, what line you're in, but which land belongs to you and where you belong in the land and your inheritance and your legal standing and your legitimacy as an heir. All of these things are wrapped up in the genealogies. And so these records were kept, and that's where Matthew is drawing all of his information from, some of which we find in the Old Testament. You can go back and look at those records, and then some of them, though, have been lost. But see, we don't really think about genealogies in the same way. I mean, we can be kind of intrigued. I was just talking to Pastor Steve this week, and he was telling me that he and Jen have done a little bit of research into their ancestry. And it turns out that they, if you trace it back far enough, that they actually have like relations or relatives who are like kings and queens. Like, you didn't know that when he was up here, you were in the presence of royalty, right? I mean, see, that's pretty cool, isn't it? That's pretty neat. And I'll be honest, like I'm kind of intrigued. Like I'm kind of curious, like who's back there in my history, but there's another part of me. I don't know if I really want to know. I mean, I'll just be honest with you. Like I know enough about my family to know that our family tree is not the prettiest tree in the forest. All right? Like I can go back just a few generations, not as far back as you might think, and I've got adulterers, murderers, and even bank robbers. Like, that's a real thing. Like, thieves. Not as far back as you would think, right? Like, they're dead now, just to be clear. They're that far. But like, not that far away. See, I don't know if I want to know everybody in my family tree because I already know that there's people back there who I wish weren't there. Hey, have you ever had somebody in your family you kind of wish wasn't there? You know, that person in your family tree you kind of wish it would have been better if we kind of left them out. Some of you had Thanksgiving lunch with them last week. And it was awkward. Some of you, you're going to see them at Christmas, right? That person, you wish you could just kind of like trade them out for maybe a better option. But don't you just wish you had a little more say in who was in your life, who was in your family tree? And I think that's a good reason that we should be kind of encouraged when we look at Jesus' family, shouldn't we? Because if you were to really unpack all the names on this list, you would see that it is full of incredibly messy people. Right, this isn't a pretty list of people. It's full of messed up, complicated, broken people. And here's what's really crazy. See, you and I, we didn't get to choose our families. We're just born into them. This is what they are. But Jesus, he actually got to choose his own family. In fact, you probably didn't catch this because we're modern Westerners, but actually Matthew gives us a clue right at the very beginning. If you go back to verse 1, it says, a record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ. Now, if you were to read this in Greek, the key words here are Biblos Genesis. Biblos Genesis. This is where we get the words Bible and Genesis. You recognize both those words. Bible, literally, is more just like a book. It's just book of Genesis, okay? And this language, for someone who's reading this, a contemporary of Matthew, this would have been very common language to them. There would have been something very familiar and yet something very wrong about how Matthew uses it. So let's start with the familiar part. It's a very common language. If you go back into the Old Testament, all the way back into the book of Genesis, you find this language. So for example, in Genesis 2:4, it says, this is the book of the Genesis. Like if you were to translate it in the Hebrew, it would be Teledot, the book of the Genesis. But when you translate from the Hebrew into the Greek, which is what you find in the Greek translation, the Septuagint, it turns into Biblos Genesis, the same phrase. The book of the Genesis of the heavens and the earth. And then Genesis 5:1, we find the same thing. This is the book of the Genesis of Adam. And what it's saying is that all of creation is contained in the heavens and the earth. Right? Here's the heavens and the earth. All of creation is contained within it. And in the same way that all of the generations following Adam were contained in him. And so Adam is the father of Seth, who's the father of Enosh, and so on and so forth, through Noah and all through the generations. So if you were to take the same language and you apply it to my family, for example, if you went back just a few generations, you would say that the book of the Genesis is the book of the Genesis of Henry Nelson, who fathered Henry Nelson II, who fathered Joseph Rogers, who fathered Lucas Rogers, who fathered Gabriel, Jude, Eli, and Eleanor Rogers. Right? So this is the book of the Genesis. It is the oldest of the generations within whom is contained all the future generations. So this is familiar language. There's just one really strange thing that Matthew does here because he calls it the book of Genesis of Jesus. Matthew, that doesn't work. You can't have a book of the Genesis of Jesus because Jesus is at the end of the line. He's at the end of the genealogy. You can't have him both. That doesn't make any sense. Clearly, Matthew got confused. Matthew got mixed up. You can't have someone at the beginning and at the end unless, of course, he was always there. And that all of creation, in fact, all of humanity is contained within him, not as the physical father, the physical parent, but as their creator. See, you didn't get to choose your family, but Jesus did. Which raises the question, why? Like, why this family? I mean, he could have picked any family. But not only that, I mean, have you ever thought about the fact that Jesus didn't need to be born at all? I mean, he could have just stepped into the world fully human. Here I am, fully adult. I mean, he's God, he can do whatever he wants. Just step in, don't have to be born of any family. Like, why have those family ties? That's messy. You know, I mean, how many of us wish we just didn't really have that, right? He could just step in and here I am, but instead he chose to be born, to be a baby, to grow up, to be part of this family. And it's not a pretty family, right? See, within his family, and we don't have time to unpack all of these names. If you're in your small group this week, you're gonna have some time where you can go through some of these names and actually walk through some of the passages and go, wow, these people were messed up. If you look through these names, their family is not that much different from mine, right? Murderers, adulterers, and thieves, and then some, like worse. Destroyed all kinds of lives, destroyed kingdoms, destroyed civilizations, right? Horrible, horrible names included in this, and yet somehow Matthew thinks that if we are to understand who Jesus is, they matter. And in fact, that's the point. That if you want to understand who Jesus is, you have to understand that these are the kinds of people that matter to him, that matter to Jesus. Not just the prim and proper people, not the people who have their lives together, not the people who know all the answers or have perfect church attendance, not the people who look good on the outside, but all of these people, messy, complicated, tarnished people who wish they probably could have a few do-overs in life. Those are the people that he makes room for in his family. Have you ever wondered where you belong? We had Thanksgiving with some friends here, and I was thinking about all the different places that I've celebrated Thanksgiving in my life. And when I was doing the numbers in my head and counting back through all the different places, I realized that I've lived in probably, I mean, well over 20 different homes. I've lived in at least 11 cities, 5 states, and 2 countries. And if you're in the military, that might sound like small potatoes to you. I don't know what your life has been like, but I know very few people who have moved as often as I have and have had to reinvent their life as often as I have. In the last few years, we even got to do it like I drove Carrie along with all of our kids just to make it that much more fun. And what I can tell you is that because of that, in a sense, I have felt like an outsider all of my life. And what I've learned is that the sense of belonging that we all long for, that we all need, we were created to know that we belong, that it has less to do with a physical or geographical location, and it has everything to do with finding your people, finding your community, your tribe, that place where everybody knows your name and everybody is glad that you came. See, we were long for that. We were built for that. But when you have moved as often as I have, that can be hard to come by. And see, some of you can relate to that. Not because you've moved so many times necessarily. In fact, you may have never moved once in your life, and yet still somehow you feel like an outsider in your own life. You still feel like you're not sure quite where you belong. You still feel like you don't quite fit. And what Matthew is telling you is that in Jesus' family, there's a place for you. He's telling you that to be part of Jesus' family, you don't have to be anyone other than you. You don't have to have your life figured out. You don't have to look good. You don't even have to be good. You just have to be you, because you are the kind of person who matters to him, and that he is where you belong. There's room in his family for you. Part of the reason that belonging is so important is because it's how we make sense of us. It's how we make sense of ourselves, is where we belong. And this is why when you meet someone, I don't know if you've noticed, but we tend to ask questions that center around belonging. Where do you belong? Where are you from? Where do you live? Where do you go to school? Where do you go to work? Right, these are questions of belonging, and they help us create frameworks and categories for understanding who that person is. We sort of create boxes that we know, okay, now I understand you. And see, when you don't know where you belong, what you're really saying is that you don't really know who you are. You have some understanding of parts of you. We understand parts of ourselves, but what we need is a framework that begins to take all of these pieces that feel a little bit unwieldy, and it begins to make sense of them. And so to discover where you belong is to have this framework that makes sense of you. And see, this is why Matthew, he gives us this genealogy. But he doesn't just give us the names, right? He gives us a framework. He gives us brackets around it. Verse 1 and verse 17 are the brackets on both sides. Verse 1, a record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. But then it skips all the way down to the other side. Verse 17, thus there were 14 generations in all, from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the exile to Babylon, and 14 from the exile to the Christ. See, a genealogy doesn't make sense on its own. Right? It's just a list of names. It's meaningless. It has to have a framework for you to begin to interpret it, for you to begin to understand it, to make sense of it. Just in the same way that history, it doesn't make sense of itself. History is just a whole series of events, but you need a framework in order to make sense of it, in order to understand what it means. And so Matthew, he brackets this genealogy between these two verses in order to give us a framework to make sense of the whole thing. But to really understand what Matthew is getting at here, we have to actually go deeper than that. In fact, we have to go quite a bit deeper. And so if you go look at verse 1 specifically, right, a record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, but who is Jesus? This is the first clue he gives us, the son of David and the son of Abraham. These are men, both of whom God gave promises to. David was the greatest king in the history of Israel. He was the king. He is the king who unified Israel, who defeated all of their enemies and put Israel on the map. He is the king of Israel. And so because of that, this is why the first grouping that Matthew gives us goes from Abraham to David, the first 14, right? And so it goes from Abraham to David. And then while David is sitting on the throne, God comes to him and promises to David that he is going to establish his line on the throne for all eternity. That this is the future kingdom that without end, and that there will be an heir of David always sitting on that throne. That's the promise. But then something goes wrong, right? David fathers Solomon, who fathers Rehoboam. And under Rehoboam, it was the beginning of the end. The kingdom begins to crumble. It splits. It comes apart. And then they are led into exile to Babylon. And so this is the next grouping that Matthew gives us, that he wants us to see, from King David to the exile. But it's during this time, during this season, these generations where the kingdom is crumbling and people begin to lose hope, that they begin to remember the promise that God made to David. And so they begin to hope for and look for and pray for the new king. And the language that they used was the anointed one. The anointed one. This is, in Hebrew, it's Messiah. In the Greek, it's Christos. And so what Matthew wants us to see is that there is another group of generations that move from exile now, and they land with Jesus. Jesus is the Christos. He is the anointed one. He is the Savior. And so these are the three groupings that we have, right? We've got from Abraham to David, from David to exile, from exile to Jesus. But there's another promise, right? It goes back to Abraham. So he was the son of David, but also the son of Abraham. And God made a promise to Abraham long before David that he was going to bless Abraham and make him a great nation. But also, and more significantly, that it was through Abraham and all of his lineage, all of his descendants, that he was going to bless the entire world. Not just the nation of Israel, but the whole of the world. And what that means is that this family line isn't just the story of the Jewish nation and their dreams of a king. It's the story of the whole world in need of a king who will finally bring justice and peace to all people. And so these are the three groupings that Matthew wants us to see, from Abraham to the King David, from David to exile, from exile to Jesus. Thus, he says, there were 14 generations in all, from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the exile to Babylon, 14 from the exile to the Christ. And what Matthew's telling us here is that these lists are a microcosm of all of human history. It's not just Israel's history. It's not just this one family. It's actually all of human history, all of world history. Every story ever written, all of it moving towards and pointing towards Jesus. There is one problem. Evidently, Matthew can't count, which is awkward. All right, so if you're actually to go back, and you can do this in your own Bibles, you can see that in the first column here, in the first grouping, you have 14 generations. So far, so good. In the second one, you find that there are 14 generations. You can count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and down. But when you get to the third grouping, you find that there's not 14, it's actually 13. Whoops. And actually, if you want to be really, you know, nitpicky about it, in that second column, that 14 is only 14 because Matthew skipped over three different kings in order to make it 14. So clearly Matthew, man, he was a little sloppy here. All right, we won't hold that against him. I mean, he was busy, I'm sure, and just kind of like blazing through this. And he was just, you know, he was like, I think it's 14. And he kind of rounded it off and he didn't really check his work. In fact, there's some people who will tell you that this is a good reason why you shouldn't put too much faith in your Bible. They literally point to this passage right here, and they'll tell you this is why you can't trust the Bible, because, look, it's just human authors, and they're writing stuff, and sometimes they get it right, sometimes they get it wrong. And Matthew, man, he was just sloppy. You know, he just got confused. He didn't count right. I mean, you know, it happens. No big deal. Maybe. But isn't it strange that Matthew can't count to 14? I mean, keep in mind that he was a former tax collector. Right, the guy literally made his livelihood by counting money. You feel like if anybody could count, it would be Matthew. He could count to 14. Like, how hard can that be? Any kindergartner can do it. I mean, so maybe Matthew, he just got in a hurry. He was just jotting it down. He kind of, you know, counted one name twice and got confused and didn't check his work. Or maybe he wanted to show us something more profound than just a list of names. So in Hebrew, if you want to count, there is not a separate numerical system the way that we have. Right? So we have an alphabet, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And if we want to count, we don't use the alphabet. We say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Right? We have two different systems. But in the Hebrew, there is no separate numerical system. You only have the alphabet. So if you take the first, for example, 6 letters in the alphabet, Aleph, Bet, Gemel, Dalet, Hey, and Vav. All right, pretty simple. You want to try it? Try it with me. Ready? Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, He, and Vav. You're so good. You not only gave me the first six letters of the alphabet, you also just counted to six. That's incredible, isn't it? There's a numerical value assigned to each letter. So if you want to spell someone's name, for example, so let's take David. You take David, you'd have three letters, Dalet, Vav, and Dalet. And there's no vowels in ancient Hebrew, okay? So this is just Dalet, Vav, and Dalet, David. But each of these letters has a corresponding numerical value, 4, 6, and 4. And if you take 4, 6, and 4, and you add them together, you get 14. 14, 14, 14. Matthew, tell us, who is Jesus? And he says, 14, 14, 14. David, David, David. In the Hebrew, if you want to emphasize something, you repeat it. Like if you want to say something is very good, you don't say very good, you say it's good, good. If you go back to Genesis, when God creates the world, and each day he looks back over his handiwork and he looks on it and sees that it was good. But on the seventh day, when he rests, he looks back over all of his creation, everything now complete, and he says it was good, good. It's very good. When the scriptures talk about God and describe God in his holiness, it doesn't just say that God is holy. It doesn't even say that God is holy, holy. It says that God is holy, holy, holy. Because God isn't just a little more holy than everybody else, right? He's not very holy. He is supremely holy. And there's nobody holier. There's nothing holier, more set apart than God. So Matthew, who is Jesus? Let me tell you, he is David, David, David. He's not just a new David or a little bit better David. No, no, no. He is the David. He's the David all of history has been pointing towards, all of the world's history, not just Israel's history, all been moving towards this David. He is the king you've been longing for, been waiting for, been looking for. He is David, David, David. He is David on steroids. He is David, the supreme David. And by the way, if you think it's weird to attribute a numerical value to someone's identity, that's just because you're not from the ancient Near East. You actually see this in a number of different places, specifically in Scripture, by the way. You see it in Revelation where someone is identified by his number, 666. See, the reason that Matthew is so intent on this number 14, the reason that he is willing to obviously and intentionally mess with the generations, right? Like, he's not fooling anybody. Like, there's no ancient Jewish person who's reading this and is like, oh, wait a minute, I didn't realize what he was happening right now. I mean, it's like so obvious to them. We don't get it because that's not who we are. But you go back then and they know he's skipping generations. They know he's moving things around. Like, he does this intentionally. He's not messing up. He is messing with generations on purpose in order to proclaim as loudly as he possibly can, who is Jesus? David, David, David. He is the king. He is the one who makes sense of all of history. All of history is pointing towards him. It's Jesus' name that's written over all of the stories of the world. And unless you see Jesus at the beginning and the end, then you've missed it. And that's true in history, and guess what? It's true with your history as well. That if you don't see Jesus as the overarching story in your life, then you've missed it. You don't really understand who you are. You can't understand all that your life is and all that your life could be, because he is the one who makes sense of our stories. He's the one who makes sense of who we are, and he calls us into a new and better future. Jesus. Jesus, Jesus. When our kids were little, we would take them to this indoor mall playground. Because when you live in Dallas, it's miserably hot like all year. It's not fun. And especially when they're really little, like there's some playgrounds that you don't want to really trust them on and kids get too big, but these are like little kid playgrounds, you know, and indoors, and it's got the nice squishy floor so they can't hurt themselves too badly. And so we would take them and you just sort of like plop them there, right? When they're really little, they just sit. That's it. Just stay right there. Maybe eventually they kind of fall over and they learn to roll around. That's how they get around. And then they start scooching. You ever do this? You see them do the scoot? I love the scooch. And at some point they start crawling. And it's not a very big space, but sometimes like our kids would start moving away from us and they crawl away from us and they're kind of hanging out and they're chill and they're good for a little while. And then you start to realize that they don't know where you are. They've kind of lost sight of you. And then they start to panic. Right? You can kind of see it, and you can see them, but they don't really know where you are. So they're looking around, they've lost sight of you, and you're watching, you're seeing the anxiety build and the fear build, and they're starting to freak out. And it was in watching that that I began to realize that the deepest sense of loneliness that we feel in the world has nothing to do with our geographic location. It has everything to do with separation. Because if we wanted to comfort our child when they felt like they were lost, where they didn't know where they belonged, we didn't have to pick them up and take them home. We didn't have to put them in the car and take them back and say, look, you're in your room, it's okay, this is where you belong. All we had to do was move back to where they could see us. And then they knew it was okay. They were where they were supposed to be. They were where they belonged because they could see us and we could see them. I have felt like an outsider most of my life. But I'll tell you that so long as I have kept my eyes on Jesus, I have never worried about where I belong. Because I know who I belong to. And the longing that we have to belong, it's not found in a place, it's found in a person. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Maybe you're here right now and you have felt like me, like an outsider in your own life. Or maybe you look back over your stories, your history, and there's things that you regret, things that you wish you could do over that you could rewrite. Maybe you're not sure where you belong because you're not sure who would ever have you. And I want you to know that right now God is speaking over you, over your story, over your history. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. He is the one who makes sense of all of your stories. He is the one who calls you into a new and better future. He is where you belong. It's not a place, it's a person. And by the way, that's who we want to be as a church. We want to be a place where people belong and find their belonging. Not because we're so great, but because this is where they can meet Jesus. That he is here with us. And if you have never met Jesus, can I tell you that he wants to meet you? He already knows you. He knows everything about you. He created you. He knows you better than you know yourself. He knows all the things that you don't think anyone knows, and he knows things about you that you don't. And he loves you more than you can possibly imagine. And what we are celebrating in the Christmas season is that the 2,000 years ago, he broke into time and space. He broke all the rules of the natural world, of the natural universe, of physics. He stepped in so that he could give his life for you. So that you could give your life to him and you could find the life that you were created to live. You could experience the abundant life that only he has for you. And if you've never met him like that, I want you to know that this morning you can give your life to Jesus. Like this morning, you could make a decision. Say, Jesus, I'm not sure if I really know you, but I know that you gave your life for me, and so I'm taking that first step. I want to meet you. I want to give my life to you. In just a moment, I'm going to pray for you. But I want you to know that you don't have to have your life figured out. All that matters is that you're you. He made you. You don't have to be good enough. You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to impress anyone, not even him. There's a place for you in his family. Let me pray. Jesus, thank you that you were willing to come and make a place for us. That where we were cut off from God because of our sin, because of our brokenness, Lord, that Jesus, you were willing to come and you were willing to make a way. And in doing so, you reconcile us to God so that we need never be alone again. We don't ever have to feel alone. We never have to to wonder where we fit in or feel like an outsider because we belong with you. There's room in your family. The belonging that we long for isn't in a place, it's in you. And Jesus, if there's anyone right now and they're wondering where they belong, I pray that right now they would know that what they've been searching for all of their lives, that sense of belonging is found in you. And I pray that right now that they would have the courage simply to give their life to you in faith. They might understand everything that they're doing. That's okay. But to take the step of faith, say, Jesus, I give you my life. You can pray that right now if that's your story. If that's where you are, you can say that to him. Jesus, I give you my life. I don't know where I belong, but I know I belong with you. So I give you my life. And if you pray that, whether it's out loud or silently or just in your heart, I want you to know that Jesus hears you. He hears you. And you have just taken the first step in a whole journey into new life with him. And if you took that step of faith, I want you to come and talk to us. We want to meet you and we want to talk to you and we want to show you what it looks like to follow him. That's just the first step. It's just the beginning. It's the most important step, but it's not the last. Jesus, thank you that you are the name over all of our stories. We all have things that we wish were different. We have families we wish were different, but more than anything, we have ourselves that we wish were different. And we can feel so lost in this world. We can feel so alone in a crowded room. We can wonder if there's any place that we truly belong. Jesus, thank you that you've made a place for us. That the belonging that we're looking for isn't found anywhere but in you. It's all of you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Easton Bible Church podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's message and that God will use it to speak powerfully into your life. If you have questions about how you can have a relationship with Jesus or would like more information about our church, you can connect with us on Instagram and Facebook or go to the Easton Bible Church website at ebc.org.